First heard that Bravo 20 was in trouble when we got a garbled radio message. We really didn't know what had gone wrong. We launched our helicopters, and as it turned out, we were looking further south than they actually were.
Patrullen hade splittrats. McNabb ledde en grupp på 5 man. Det började snöa.
It was plain to see if the weather don't kill us, the enemy will. And we were continuously getting compromised by these goats. The whole land was covered with people herding goats. So I made the decision that we're going to hijack a vehicle that night and go for the border.
Och det var vad McNabb och hans 4 kamrater gjorde. Men nära gränsen råkade de in i en rad eldstrider och 2 dog. De andra blev tillfångatagna.
I decided to hide in a drainage culvert about 4 kilometers from the Syrian border. I have no idea what happened, but it was just chaotic sort of shooting. So I knew I was in the shit. As I was pulled out, it was the first time I'd been out in daylight. Beautiful sunny day, and you could see Syria. You could see the high ground of Syria, which was severely pissed me off because you were so close, you could literally taste it. You know, and that was it. I was captured.
De övriga 3 i patrullen hade börjat gå mot syriska gränsen. En man dog av kylan. En blev tillfångatagen och en tredje tog sig fram till gränsen.
It was night. I started to move around the edge of a building. A guy came out about 200 meters away. He saw me. I hid behind a mound. Two guys started to walk down. I could possibly bluff it by letting them walk past me. As it was, they came right on top of me. I took the first guy out with a knife. The second guy started to run. I caught up with him. And we grappled on the floor and he ended up with a broken neck. On the last night, when I started to collapse, I knew I was getting very, very close to dying at that point. I knew I had to get water. There was a goat herder's house. I staggered up there. A young guy came out and greeted me. I asked if this was Iraq. He then said, Syria. He pointed back and showed me where Iraq was and assured me that I was safe.
Bombanfallen mot Irak fortsatte. För det brittiska flygvapnet var det ett svårt krig. I krigets inledningsskede ådrog man sig hela 25% av de allierades totala förluster. En flygplansbesättning kunde inte räkna med att klara sig längre än ett par veckor.
We've lost 3 crews in the first 4 nights from my own detachment of 24 crews. And therefore, by definition, really, if the statistics continue at that rate and the losses continue at that rate, then you're going to last 24, 25 days if you're the last crew to go. You could, of course, be the next crew to go.
Whatever reasons may have been given after the war, the reason those aircraft crashed was because they were flying low level, for one reason or another. It may have been they flew into ground, maybe they were hit by flak, maybe they were avoiding flak, but they were flying low level. And so one said, well, is this necessary? Is this a sensible thing to do? And the answer was, no, it isn't necessary, and it's not a sensible thing to do, and I don't want to go on doing it.
Den amerikanska stridsledningen beundrade flygarna, men tyckte att taktiken var betänklig. De hade gärna avstyrt uppdrag mot flygfält som irakierna inte ens hade försökt att använda. Besättningarna föreslog också att man skulle byta taktik, men ingenting hände.
It was going to impact on the whole of the RAF's strategy and put it into question. And as a result of that, there was a great reluctance in the MOD for it to change. And we weren't allowed to change it. The commanders on the spot were forbidden to change it.
Shrapnel has gone through here and has gone out through the top of the wing.
Först när man hade förlorat ytterligare ett tornadoplan och amerikanerna började ställa obehagliga frågor upphörde britterna med anfallen på låg höjd.
I think it was quite disgraceful interference by the Ministry of Defense in the tactics. Not the policy, not the strategy of the war, the tactics of running that war.
Gamla Buccaneer-plan, den modell som tornadon skulle ersätta, flögs i all hast till Persiska viken. De hade med sig utrustning för att lasermarkera mål från högre höjder.
Splash. Good. That was an excellent splash.
Snart flög de i par med tornadoplan och fällde laserstyrda bomber. När kriget hade pågått i en vecka trodde flygvapnet planerare fortfarande att bombanfallen mot Irak kunde leda till en avgörande seger. En stor del av Iraks flygvapen hade slagits ut på marken. De allierade hade totalt luftherravälde och kunde bomba som de ville. Broar, kraftverk, kommunikationer, allt förstördes. Men Saddam vägrade att lämna Kuwait. Han var fast besluten att vänta ut bombräderna.
كان يقول ايضا بان ما تدمر سوف نصلحه كله ما في مشكله يحاول ان يقوي المعنويات.
You could sense the angst and anxiety and unease throughout the American body politic. Gosh, it's been going on for a week. Why isn't it over? Maybe it's not going well. What are we trying to do? And we had not been sort of on stage to explain what we were trying to do. So I went up to see Secretary Cheney and said to the secretary, you know, we've got to do something because this is, you know, we're starting to lose the public on this one.
Secretary Cheney and General Powell are here.
Rädslan för att krigsmakten skulle få den amerikanska allmänheten emot sig som under Vietnamkriget påverkade Powells tänkesätt under hela kriget. Informationen utåt var krigets andra front.
As a measure of effectiveness of how we're doing in the air campaign, I just pull these two things out. I've laundered them so you can't really tell what I'm talking about because I don't want the Iraqis to know what I'm talking about. But trust me, trust me.
Officiellt var man inte ute efter Saddam personligen. Men de allierade genomförde 260 uppdrag mot platser där man trodde att han kunde gömma sig. Till sist fick man spionrapporter som sa att Saddam sov i privata hem och bytte vistelseort varje kväll.
You can find out perhaps where he has been. You can find out even where he is. But what you need to know is where he's going to be because you must mount an attack. And so it's almost an impossible task.
فمثلا لعل من الغرابة أن نقول بأن رئيس جمهورية يتنقل بسيارة تاكسي قديمة ومن الغريب أن نقول بأن صدام يتنقل بسيارة حمل لوري هذا من ضمن إجراءاته الأمنية.
De här bilderna gav upphov till några av de mest osannolika uppdragen under kriget. Saddam sitter i en amerikansk husbil av den typ som kallas Winnebago.
When we saw him sitting in a Winnebago, we went after the Winnebagos with a vengeance. And whenever we saw one or tried to find one, and whenever we saw one or two or three, we would attack them as quickly as we possibly could.
Irakiska soldater i Kuwait öppnade en oljeledning så att oljan rann ut i Persiska viken. Syftet var att förstöra avsaltningsanläggningarna som försåg Saudi-Arabien med dricksvatten. Saddam ville provocera fram ett markkrig snarast möjligt för att undergräva västalliansens stridsvilja. Men avsaltningsanläggningarna fortsatte att fungera och efter en bombräd skars oljeflödet av. Om irakierna ville ha ett markkrig fick de själva gå till anfall. Saddam beordrade sina styrkor att rycka fram till den övergivna saudiska gränsstaden Kafji.
وقال صدام أسروا لي اقبضوا لي على 4,000 أو 5,000 جندي غربي أمريكي بريطاني فرنسي ونشدهم أي نضعهم على أبدان أي ظهر الدبابات ونتقدم بهم لاحتلال منابع النفط السعودية ففي هذا الحال لا تستطيع الطائرات الأمريكية أو البريطانية أو الفرنسية مهاجمة دباباتنا حفظا على أرواح جنودهم.
Den kvällen skickade amerikanska marinkåren ut ett obemannat spionplan på en rutinflygning över de irakiska ställningarna i södra Kuwait. Planet sände tillbaka tv-bilder till en lastbil på hemmabasen.
do we have
Holy
here?
Holy crow.
Let's see what they are. Man, this is something. Whatever they're towing, it's got four wheels.
Det irakiska anfallet mot Kafji hade börjat. Stan var oförsvarad. Den hade utrymts på krigets första dag sedan den utsatts för irakisk artillerield. I stridsledningsfordonet väntade helikopterpiloter på anfallsorder, men ordern kom aldrig.
We'd been on the landline back to our wing headquarters, let them know what was going on. We started, you know, a million and one scenarios began running through our minds on, you know, why in the world would they not be letting us launch on these vehicles? Guess what? Closer, closer. And 2,253 hours. They've crossed the border.
They've crossed
in Saudi Arabia. King Fahd's going to be pissed. Fahd baby's going to be pissed.
He's going to be hot.
I en och en halv timme iakttog marinsoldaterna den irakiska framryckningen. På flyghögkvarteret hade kriget gått in i rutinmässiga banor. I rutinerna ingick det inte några irakiska anfall.
This is ridiculous. Frickin' bomber couldn't ask for any better target than that.
Why was the Iraqi advance not stopped prior to Kafji? A very straightforward, simple question. Deserves a very straightforward, simple answer. It was not the Air Force's best day.
Irakierna intog Kafji. Vad de inte visste var att amerikanskt marininfanteri hade gömt sig i staden. Den ena av de sex man starka spaningspatrullerna leddes av Chuck Ingram. Den andra leddes av Lawrence Lentz.
I got the team together and I said we've been practicing for some of us 5 years to play in the big game, and now here we all of a sudden get a chance. I think we ought to stay. And they agreed.
You're the only people there, yourself and another team of your buddies somewhere else in the city. And you know that that's it. The point of no return.
Stand by.
The armless missile, I'll shoot it down range. Take that bad boy out.
Bagdad tillkännagav en stor seger. Men i gryningen nästa dag hade det amerikanska artilleriet gått i ställning. Marinsoldaterna inne i Kafji gav artilleriet noggrann eldledning på radio.
When I finally got artillery fire, it was the best feeling in the world. Everything we called in was what we call danger close, which simply means that it's so close that the round could actually hit us instead of the enemy.
Marinsoldaterna i Kafji väntade sig att de skulle bli upptäckta vilket ögonblick som helst.
Iraqis came very close to capturing us. They were inside of our building for at least a day. You could see their heads down there, and if you wanted to, you could spit on them.
Två dagar senare formerade sig saudiska styrkor till anfall för att ta tillbaka staden. Det skulle kosta dem 19 döda. Ett hundratal irakier stupade. Flyget slog ut två irakiska divisioner som gjorde förtvivlade försök att ta sig fram till Kafji. En av de överlevande som senare deserterade berättar att han såg tusentals döda norr om staden.
كانوا خايفين لانه اولا امامهم يعني الموت امامهم ده يشوفون يعني واحد زميل اللي مثلا لاحظ قبل ساعه كان يحكي وياه او مثلا يسولف او عايش وياه فتره معينه مثلا من الزمن هسه مثلا يشوفه ملقى على الارض مثلا مقتول او مجروح ما حد ما يقدر يسوي له شيء ما يقدر يروح يجيبه مثلا ان يخلصه او يسحبه مثلا الى المواضع.
I flera månader hade Saddam hävdat att markstriderna skulle åderlåta de allierade och undergräva deras stridsmoral. Men försöket att undsätta Kafji var en smärtsam påminnelse om hur det kunde gå för en armé som förlorat kontrollen över luftrummet.
كما قلت بأن حالات من التوتر والقلق كانت تظهر عليه. ولكن كان يحاول إخفائها. كان في حركة دائمة مستمرة. في المراحل الأولى لم يكن يبالي كثيرا لكن تصاعدت الأزمة في داخله تصاعدا جنونيا.
Anfallen mot Bagdad fortsatte med stealthbombare på natten och kryssningsrobotar på dagen. Hotellet där de utländska journalisterna bodde fungerade som den sista lägeskontrollen för robotarna innan de slutligen satte kurs på målet. Fångar från de allierade hölls nu som gisslan i Bagdad.
This character came in looking at my teeth. You knew that something was going to happen, but you were hoping that maybe it wasn't. It was maybe some stupid, you know, they're doing it for a laugh, but there's nothing you can do. And in fact, what he done, he got a pliers or a pinchers or whatever they were, and he took the back quarter of the tooth out. I was struggling, I was screaming, and this is a demonstration of what we can do. Do you really think we're going to help you? You know, we can just let you die. There's no problems with this.
They just yanked me up and just karate chopped through and kind of felt like the heel of the boot just into my knee. And I collapsed again, and they just pulled me up, smack, pulled me up, smack, pulled me up, smack, pulled me up, smack. And eventually, and somewhere in there, whilst they're doing that, they say, are you pilot or navigator? Are you pilot? And eventually, pilot. And it just came out. I couldn't stop it. And that's when you realise you've broken to the violence. You feel a desperate sense of failure that you've let everyone down.
Do you have a message?
I thought everyone would thought I was a traitor, and that everyone would see that I'd failed, and that that was the last image my family was going to see of me.
Terry and Guy, I love you.
تم إصابتي بمنظومة عراقية لا أتمكن من تحديد.
Somebody came up and he said, "We're going to execute you, or you can go on TV," and it was a stark choice of, you know, make the broadcast or be killed.
I think this war should be stopped so we can go home. I do not agree on this war with Iraq.
And that was, I think, the ultimate shame. Everything that had gone before paled in insignificance about sitting in front of a TV camera and decrying your country, for want of a better expression.
I'm now going to show you a picture of the luckiest man in Iraq on this particular day. Keep your eye on the crosshairs. Right there. Look at here. Right through the crosshairs.
De allierades överlägsenhet var förkrossande, men flyget hade brist på mål.
Now in his rearview mirror.
Late in January, we came to the lower part of the list, and one of those targets that we hadn't been able to get to before, because it wasn't high priority, was a bunker in the Al-Fridus area of Baghdad.
Två stealthplan fick i uppgift att angripa målet. Några dagar tidigare hade en spion i Bagdad rapporterat att bunkern användes av den irakiska underrättelsetjänsten.
We went in and you could see where the blast and the fire had been, and they were pulling bodies out.
Bunkern var ett civilt skyddsrum.
There was a smell of damp cinders and there was still a lot of smoke around. On top of the water there was about an inch of scum, of flesh, of boiled flesh, of burnt flesh, basically.
204 människor dog, bland dem många kvinnor och barn. Skyddsrummen var de enda platserna där det fanns rinnande vatten och elektricitet. Därför tog familjer sin tillflykt dit varje kväll.
The bunker that was attacked last night was a military target. A command and control center that fed instructions directly to the Iraqi war machine, painted and camouflaged to avoid detection, and well documented as a military target.
It was pretty far down the list of command and control sites, near the bottom. And in fact, I recall when Buster and I were in the car driving down to our evening meeting with General Schwarzkopf, where we'd go over the targets we were going to hit 2 days hence. He and I talked about it, and we kind of concluded that we were getting into sort of the marginal targets in the Baghdad area.
I lose my wife and my children. Is that fair? Nobody else, nobody says something to stop this massacre.
We wondered momentarily if, in fact, there was some sort of a propaganda ploy. These people were Kurds that Saddam Hussein had murdered and then put in there, things like that. But it was obvious that, in fact, it was being used as an air raid shelter.
Om de allierade hade vetat om att det fanns civilpersoner där hade man inte bombat skyddsrummet. Men Pentagon har alltid hävdat att den gren av den irakiska underrättelsetjänsten som övervakade oliktänkande också hade använt byggnaden. Det förnekas av Bagdad.
هذا كان ملجأ لعناصر احد اجزائه الرئيسيه يشغل من قبل عناصر المخابرات. كانت في المخابرات عدة هيئات من ضمنها المديرية الإدارية والفنية وكان هؤلاء يأتون إلى هذا الملجأ كما إحدى المرات دخل صدام الملجأ فعلا.
It's a day when the reality of war bit home on the television screens and into the living rooms of people around the world in a way that perhaps it hadn't, because it had been a video game war, Schwarzkopf proudly showing off the results of bombing on bridges, clean cuts, surgical airstrikes. But, I mean, that day we actually saw what it was all about.
The Alfredo bunker hit gave us a major public relations and political problem. I mean, it stopped everything we were doing for about a day and a half while we paid our attention to that. And so after that, I called General Schwarzkopf and we talked about it. I said, Norm, clearly, we did what we thought was right, but it turned out to be full of civilians. We've got to look at the target list a little more closely. And we got to take a look at what it is we're doing in Baghdad itself. We didn't shut down all targets in Baghdad, but I asked questions like, why are we bombing the Ba'ath Party headquarters for the eighth time? Do we think there is somebody still in the Ba'ath Party headquarters? Why are we bouncing rubble with million-dollar missiles?
Bombkriget var förödande för Irak, men Saddam satt kvar vid makten och hans trupper ockuperade fortfarande Kuwait. Det var uppenbart att kriget inte kunde vinnas enbart med flygstridskrafter.
How much more hitting of strategic targets in Baghdad would have caused Saddam Hussein to move his forces out of the desert? Let's get real. Ultimately, if you want to gain Kuwait back, and if you want to do what the United Nations charged us to do, you've got to go on the ground and take it back. Saddam Hussein was not going to vacate the trenches and the area where he was without someone going in on the ground kicking him out.
En halv miljon amerikanska, brittiska och arabiska soldater gick i ställning. Anfallet för att befria Kuwait skulle börja om 11 dagar.
I dokument utifrån special får vi idag se hur det gick till bland de allierade under operation Ökenstorm. Det var en intensiv flygbombning som skulle dra igång och bland befälen som ledde det hela var stämningen inte alltid den bästa.
När kriget hade pågått i 6 veckor lyfte ett antal stealthplan för ett rutinmässigt bombanfall mot Bagdad. En intensiv flygbombning pågick alltjämt som förberedelse för offensiven som skulle befria Kuwait. Kvällens mål var en byggnad som tillhörde underrättelsetjänsten, och de allierade inte visste var att det fanns brittiska fångar i huset.
There's a flash and the whole place just went up. The ceiling came in, the walls were coming down, the tiles were blown off the walls. Then you hear the second bomb coming in, and by that stage you're fully curled up in a ball, and that's when you hear, and it's deafening as it comes in, and somebody kind of shouted, "Incoming!" After three bombs, I thought, that's it. I'm now going to die. And it was actually a calming experience. I just sat down and thought, I'm going to die.
Trots förödelsen fortsatte Saddam att utmana de allierade. För att befria Kuwait krävdes det en markoffensiv.
The president said now, Colin, you and Norm are really sure that air power alone can't do it. And my response was, Mr. President, I wish to God that I could assure you that air power alone could do it. But you can't take that chance.
Allas blickar riktades nu mot Norman Schwarzkopf. Tiden före markoffensiven plågades han av oro för att förlusterna skulle bli kolossala. Trycket på honom var starkt. Hans raseriutbrott var allmänt kända.
Working with Norm Schwarzkopf, it was sort of like watching a thermometer. The blood would start around the shirt collar and then it would work its way up to the jawline and then to the ears. And by the time it got to the ears, you ought to watch out.
I would say that working for General Schwarzkopf was a privilege and an honor, but there were many times when if someone had asked me if I would rather have been in that war room or in the dental chair having a root canal without anesthesia, I probably would have chosen the dental chair.
Schwarzkopf var fruktad av sina medarbetare. Britterna iakttog honom med stigande förvåning.
Norman going ballistic put people off their jobs and took their eye off the ball. But on the upside, he was a brilliant military strategist with a lot of experience. He was understood the Arabs and the Arab world, and he was a great diplomat and was able to bring nations along and foreign armies along in a way that a lesser man would not have been able to.
When human lives are on the line, you cannot be cavalier. You can't do enough. You cannot do enough. You must do everything you possibly can and leave no stone unturned, and you can't settle. You can never settle for second best or a second class solution when you're dealing with enterprises of such magnitude that they involve the lives of literally thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
Paul och Cheney flög till Saudiarabien för att orientera sig om planerna. Schwarzkopf sa att han skulle anfalla tidigast om 2 veckor.
Dick liked Norm, respected Norm, had confidence in Norm, but every now and then Dick reflected on the fact that this was a very important operation. It was for all the marbles, as we say. And Norm was known to be volatile. Norm was known to be also reluctant. I sort of get the tag for being the reluctant warrior, but you won't find many of my military colleagues who were anxious to race into this before we were ready to race into it.
Trots bombanfallen hade Saddam Hussein fortfarande 400 000 man i Kuwait bakom minfält, skyttegravar och taggtråd. Han trodde att Irak skulle kunna hejda de allierade och tvinga fram ett blodigt ställningskrig. Och att USA efter Vietnamkriget inte ville utsätta sig för svåra förluster.
Kan jag tänka بأن القوات الأمريكية ليست مستعدة للاشتباك البري، وكان يعتقد بأن درس فيتنام كان قاسيا للإدارة الأمريكية.
Schwarzkopf var bekymrad. Han använde B-52 från Vietnamtiden till att bomba de irakiska styrkorna som hade grävt ner sig i Kuwait. 72 000 bomber fälldes. De flesta föll över öde öken. Man upptäckte ett programmeringsfel i B-52-ornas navigeringssystem. Men också när det hade rättats till fördes bomberna ofta ur kurs av starka vindar.
We thought that we would destroy tanks somewhere between the 20 and 30 a day, and we weren't coming anywhere close. We were down in the area of 6 or 8. And so after about 10 days of that, I knew that we had to do something different.
Nu skickade Glasson ut 2 stridsplan av typ F111 på ett uppdrag som skulle få långtgående följder. När planen kom fram till de irakiska linjerna fann piloterna att till och med de bäst kamouflerade stridsvagnarna avtecknade sig som en vit rektangel på deras värmesökande kameror. Stridsvagnarna hade hettats upp av solljuset. Och till skillnad från B-52-orna hade F-111-orna laserstyrda bomber.
4, 3, 2, 1, impact. Okay, sequence me.
Okay. I called General Gloss and I said, Buster, you wouldn't believe how successful we were tonight. It was really shit hot. We had 7 for 8 direct hits. Piece of cake.
Hundratals stridsvagnar slogs ut en efter en. Under trycket av de ständiga bombningarna började den irakiska armén upplösas. Vad de allierade inte kände till var att omkring 200 000 irakiska soldater deserterade.
Shawhabu dakara daha. Roshabu dakara daha. Am dakara ta hamu rami akirdu. Shawhar rami akirdu. Roshar rami akirdu. Shawrosh harunagu. Tarinabu. Har ma'adal agru asan abari lo matika. Har tiara daha rami akirdu. Awa su awa had. Awa asmana hamu tiara bu. Awa daha tu rami akirdu asu. Sa'at yagnabu du sa'al nabu. Yagdaqa mazal nabu. مستمر لسلسله بو لي اداي كاتبون ابو
اما اثارها فقد كانت مدمره فقد اقول لك فشيء مثلا كنا ناتي الى فرقه مشاه يبلغ تعدادها 15,000 شخص اصبح موجودها 34 شخصا فقط فكم اذا نستطيع ان نقول اصبحت صفر 34 من 15,000.
Colin Powell och Dick Cheney återvände från besöket hos Schwarzkopf. De talade om för en otålig George Bush att de allierade kunde anfalla om 2 veckor. Bush ville inte ha några uppskov. Moskvas stöd som var så viktigt för alliansen höll på att försvagas. Tidigare samma dag hade Sovjet föreslagit att anfallet skulle uppskjutas för att ge tid för förhandlingar.
We are not going to suit somebody else's timetable, whether he lives in Baghdad or any place else.
När krigskabinettet möttes för att gå igenom anfallsplanen framförde Powell en allvarlig varning. Markstriderna skulle bli blodigare än presidenten kunde föreställa sig.
I was quite confident we would be successful because we had put together a decisive force. But no plan survives first contact with a real enemy.
Colin made a very eloquent statement warning everybody it was going to be a lot uglier and a lot messier than they thought. The battle would not go as the plans said, and that he had an obligation to warn the president about casualties, that there were unpredictable circumstances in war, and that once it started, the president was no longer in control.
Men presidentens otålighet var berättigad.
By missile or by bomb?
By rockets.
This is by...
Gorbachev hade skickat en högt uppsatt diplomat till Bagdad. Yevgeni Primakovs uppgift var att försöka få Saddam att gå med på en uppgörelse som skulle rädda hans ansikte. Primakov fick först beskåda förödelsen och fördes sen till en av regeringens gästvillor i centrala Bagdad.
Sen han зашел в длинной шинели, было холодно, буржуйка такая. Эта печка такая горела, там была зажжена электрическая. Но потом, когда мы остались одни, тогда вот начался настоящий разговор. И он тогда первый раз сказал прямо: «Хорошо, я выведу свои войска из Кувейта. Единственное, что я хочу, чтобы мне бы не стреляли в спину».
48 timmar innan markanfallet skulle börja kom Iraks utrikesminister Tariq Aziz till Moskva. När Saddam hade sagt att han var villig att lämna Kuwait satte Sovjetunionen igång frenetiska diplomatiska ansträngningar för att rädda sin gamla bundsförvant från nederlag.
Gorbachev, to me, was making one last attempt to try and have it both ways. He wanted to stay with the United States in the course of this conflict, and yet he also wanted, was under, I think, great pressure from various elements of the Soviet bureaucracy to try and preserve this client relationship with the Iraqis and with Saddam Hussein, who, after all, had been a Soviet client for many, many years.
Aziz begav sig direkt till Kreml. Den sovjetiske presidenten väntade. Aziz sa till Gorbachev att han inte kunde godta de FN-resolutioner som krävde att Irak skulle erkänna Kuwaits självständighet och betala skadestånd. Men Irak gick med på att lämna Kuwait. Gorbachev tyckte att det var tillräckligt och ringde upp Washington.
Gorbachev called the president saying, look, I've worked this out whereby we can get Saddam out of Kuwait without a war.
Я президенту Бушу сказал, Джордж, ведь вообще говоря, вы должны, и мы все должны думать не только о том, как начать, но потом, как кончить эти военные действия, как выходить из этого конфликта. Вот мы с вами, генералы там должны думать, как операцию провести успешнее, чтобы она была эффективнее, а мы должны думать, как выйти из этого.
We kept coming back to him and saying, no, you continually are suggesting approaches which do not require an unconditional withdrawal. And we were never, 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 never going to accept a negotiating down from the UN resolutions.
Trots allt samlade presidenten sina rådgivare till ett avgörande möte. De hade blivit erbjudna det som de hela tiden hade önskat sig, en irakisk reträtt utan något blodigt markkrig. Men då skulle Saddam undkomma ostraffad och utan att ha blivit besegrad. Bush ringde upp Gorbachev och meddelade att förslaget var oacceptabelt.
It was a very difficult phone call for the president and a very anguished one for Gorbachev.
Тем не менее, мы должны сейчас не терять время и искать политически. Он говорит, я заинтересован в этом. Пойми меня, я заинтересован, чтобы сейчас политически решить вопрос. Но ничего же пока не получается. Ну, я призывал не терять настроение, не терять волю и не торопиться, а продолжая действовать вместе, тем не менее, выходить на политическое решение.
The president just said, no, I'm sorry. You know, he's had all the chances. He's had months. He's had from August 2nd, we have given him every opportunity. And we've told him that this aggression would not stand. And now it's too late.
Bush could have said, okay, let us have a ceasefire and then discuss the other matters. He did not accept the ceasefire. He continued the war according to his own schedule. He didn't care about what Gorbachev said and reached with me. He had a schedule.
Alliansen knakade i fogarna. Frankrikes president François Mitterrand ringde upp och begärde mer tid för diplomatiska ansträngningar. Men då ingrep Saddam Hussein.
We received word that Saddam had blown the oil wells, and I went rushing up to the Oval Office, and Bush used it right then in the telephone call with Mitterrand, sort of, Francois, we've just received this piece of information that shows that we cannot delay, that Saddam is going to produce a catastrophe in Kuwait. He's already set all the oil wells on fire, and God knows what he may do next. And that pretty well resolved that issue.
Två arméer stod stridsberedda mot varandra.
The coalition will give Saddam Hussein until noon Saturday to do what he must do. Begin his immediate and unconditional withdrawal from Kuwait.
Hundratals oljekällor stod i brand över hela Kuwait. Saddam Hussein ville förstöra allt han inte kunde behålla. Han tog ingen notis om USAs ultimatum. Om han hade fogat sig hade han blivit förödmjukad i arabvärldens ögon.
I have therefore directed General Norman Schwarzkopf to use all forces available to eject the Iraqi army from Kuwait.
More than anything else in those final hours, I was asking myself, what did I forget? What have I missed? What more can I do? Once you have thrown the dice in the air, you can't call them back. At that point, all you can do is wait until they land on the table to see what the numbers come up. And that is a very awkward time because you can just sit there on your hands and wait. There's nothing more you can do.
Planen gick ut på att först låta marinkåren anfalla rakt in i Kuwait. Schwarzkopf hoppades att det skulle få elitförbanden i det republikanska gardet att gå söderut för att slå tillbaka anfallet. 65 mil västerut skulle franska och amerikanska styrkor samtidigt slå en ring runt slagfältet. Arabiska styrkor skulle understödja anfallet mot Kuwait. 24 timmar efter den första stöten skulle amerikanernas och britternas tunga pansar bryta igenom den irakiska fronten och anfalla genom den västra öknen där försvarslinjerna var uttunnade.
I always thought that there was a reason why they left the west open and that this was would be a place where they would lay down a biological attack, whether it be anthrax or whether it be botulism.
The Iraqis had chemical weapons. We knew that. They had biological weapons. We knew that. They had used them. We knew that. And they were going to be fighting what Saddam Hussein called the mother of all battles.
And I had my intelligence staff using terms like chemical killing sack, nuclear detonation area, and this sort of thing to describe possible scenarios as to why that area was left open.
I would wake up in the middle of the night in cold sweat just thinking about, would they use them? Would they use them in the area out west where there was not a lot of troops? And we thought there must be a reason for that.
Schwarzkopfs plan innebar att marinkårens befälhavare Walt Boomer skulle bli den första som ledde sina trupper i strid. Trots övertaget i luften befarade Boomer att en stormning av minfälten och taggtrådshindren i södra Kuwait skulle kosta honom stora förluster genom massiva insatser av kemiska vapen och nervgas från irakiernas sida. Britterna hade övat anfall tillsammans med marinkåren men dragits ur för 2 månader sedan.
It was a frontal attack and it was going to be across straight into the Iraqi main defensive positions. And to have gone ahead committing a British division that wasn't even suited to that type of warfare to that and take unnecessarily heavy casualties, if I'd agreed to that, I wouldn't have been doing my job and I think I should have been removed from command.
We were outnumbered when we attack into Kuwait. Sometimes people have lost sight of that. But in addition to being outnumbered, there was this overriding concern, overwhelming concern about chemical warfare. This just occupied most of my waking moments.
Under röken från de brinnande oljekällorna drog stormtrupperna på sig de otympliga skyddsdräkter som kanske skulle rädda deras liv vid ett anfall med kemiska vapen. Oron för att marinkåren skulle drabbas av stora förluster hade dessförinnan utlöst en märklig konfrontation.
Weather conditions were absolutely critical. And the weather predictions that we were getting at that time were very mixed. The Marines, as you probably know, do not have a lot of heavy artillery and depend upon their aircraft to provide the close air support to replace the artillery. And Walt Boomer came to me and said he was very concerned about launching his attack when the weather was predicted to be so bad.
I Pentagon fick Colin Powell ett samtal från Schwarzkopf som begärde att markkriget skulle skjutas upp.
But we have a president who is anxious to get this over with. And I went and talked to Norm on the phone and said, Norm, look, this is getting hard to explain. And I took him through why it was getting hard to explain, and he just had it. He exploded and said, you know, you do not understand my problem. You're talking in political terms. If you don't care about the lives of young people, well, I do. That did it. I exploded, and I started shouting back at him. You know, I care as much as you do, but there's a limit. And I have to work in both the political world and the military world.
When you're caught in the middle on something like that, it's not a pleasant position to be in, and it puts you under more strain than you were already under, just in the strain of undertaking the type of thing that we were getting ready to do.
He said, Colin, I think I'm losing it. I feel my head's in a vice. I said, you're not losing it. You have a total confidence. We got a problem. We'll work our way through this problem. And then about 30 minutes later, Norm called and said, oh, weather's fine. We can go.
Marinkårens ingenjörssoldater började krypande ta sig fram genom en flera kilometer lång zon med minfält, bunkrar och taggtrådshinder som skyddade Iraks frontlinje.